In yesterday's video where I talked about Israel and Palestine, I spoke of my personal feeling that people that aren't directly affected ought to remain serene and calm and yield the floor to people that have personal investment and are closely and directly affected by these issues. That's why I've had a couple of conversations this week from, I suppose you'd have to say, different opposing sides of this very serious matter. Certainly a matter that I consider to be complex, but people on either side sometimes think and directly claim is a simple matter, as a sort of, I suppose, a further indication of how polarizing this matter is. The first of the conversations that took place on my podcast Under the Skin is with Dr. Gabor Maté, the therapist and writer, physician, and I would say sort of modern day shaman. But furthermore, and significantly with regards to this matter, he is a Holocaust survivor. Many of his family members were killed in the Holocaust. He had this to say about the situation in Israel now. It's one of the most beautiful, profound, and effective things I've ever seen anybody say about this conflict. And I fail to see how anybody could... I think anybody who sees it will be deeply moved by Gabor Maté's wisdom and truth, his directness and his passion and his compassion.
This is one of the issues that's closest to my heart, and it has been for a long time. So, you know my history, I don't have to repeat it, but I'm personally a Holocaust survivor as an infant. I barely survived. My grandparents were killed in Auschwitz, and most of my extended family was killed. That's my personal background. I grew up ashamed of my Jewishness. In Hungary, after the war, I was still bullied for being Jewish. And I remember one of my friends coming to my rescue once, saying, "Leave him alone, it's not his fault that he's Jewish." It's a fault, but it's not his fault. This was the defense. So I grew up with that. My grandfather, who a physician and an author, by the way, who died in Auschwitz, was a good friend of Vladimir Jabotinsky, who was one of the major Zionist leaders and the founder of the party that became Likud, the current government of Israel. So that's my family. And this is my background. In my teenage years in Canada, I became a Zionist. This dream of the Jewish people resurrected in their historical homeland, and the barbed wire of Auschwitz being replaced by the boundaries of a Jewish state with a powerful army, I found it liberating. It was exhilarating to believe in that dream. And I absorbed all that perspective and all that point of view, and I really believed in it. And then I found out that it wasn't exactly like that. That in order to make this Jewish dream a reality, we had to visit a nightmare on the local population. You couldn't, there was a Zionist slogan called a land without a people for a people without a land. But there was no people there was no land without a people. There was people living there who'd been living there for hundreds and years or even longer. As a matter of fact, if you want to hear something really interesting, and David Ben-Gurion, who was the first prime minister of Israel, actually subscribed to this. He said this, who are the Palestinians? Because the Jews in Roman times, all of them never left Palestine. Many of them stayed there. And some of them, hundreds of years later, converted to Islam. So guess who the Palestinians are? In some ways, they might be descendants of ancient Jews. They are cousins, to say the least, no matter how you look at it. And you know, and there's no way you could have ever created a Jewish state without oppressing and expelling the local population, which is what they did in 1947, beginning in 1947, and first of all, with British Empire protection, you know, but they did this. And then in 1948, Israeli historians, Jewish Israeli historians, have shown without a doubt that the expulsion of the Palestinians was persistent, it was pervasive, it was cruel, it was murderous, and with deliberate attempt. So that's what's called the Nakba in Arabic, the disaster or the catastrophe. Now in Israel, now in Canada, there's a law that you cannot deny the Holocaust. I don't believe in such laws, by the way. But in Israel, you're not allowed to mention the Nakba, even though it was at the very basis of the foundation of the state. So once I became aware of all this, I was, okay, well, yeah, we created this beautiful dream, but we imposed a nightmare on somebody else. And then I visited the occupied territories, Russell, during the First Intifada. I cried every day for 2 weeks at what I saw. The brutality of the occupation, the petty harassment, the murderousness of it, the burning down of Palestinian, or cutting down of Palestinian olive groves, the denial of water rights, the humiliations. And this went on, and it's much worse now than it was then. So this is the background. And it couldn't have been in any other way. Because again, you couldn't have created that exclusive Jewish state without oppressing or expelling the local population. It's the longest ethnic cleansing operation in the 20th and 21st centuries. It's still going on. And who are these people in Gaza? Now you have to go to Gaza. You have to go there to really appreciate it. It's a small area where there are these multiple hundreds of thousands of people. Who are those people? The direct children or grandchildren of the people that are expelled from Israel, of what is now Israel. Now here's the outrage. And I'd like your Zionist friend in the States to tell me this. I, as a Jew, I could land in Tel Aviv tomorrow and demand citizenship under the right law of the right of return. But my Palestinian friend in Vancouver, Hana Kawas, who was born in Jerusalem, can't even visit. Now, if I have the right of return after 2,000 years, if that history is even the way it is, which is itself questionable, but let's assume that it is. If I have the right to return after 2,000 years, how come Hana hasn't got the right to return after 70 years? So what sense does it? Now, so who is Gaza? This desperate, blockaded, let me stop again. Am I talking too long about this? I'm sorry, this is so important to me and I know so much about it that I don't even know where to stop.
No, carry on, Gabo, please.
So then you have these miserable people packed into this horrible, people call it the world's largest outdoor prison, which is what it is. Incredible poverty, 50% unemployment. Now Hamas is an Islamic organization that was originally encouraged by Israel and supported by Israel as a counterweight to the secular Palestine Liberation Organization, which Israel didn't want to deal with. And given those conditions, of course people will go for extremist leadership. That's what people do when they're miserable and hopeless and deprived of any possibility whatsoever. You don't have to support Hamas policies to stand up for Palestinian rights. That's a complete falsity. But there were free elections in Gaza, monitored by international community. They were declared to be the freest elections ever held in the Arab world. And Hamas happened to win. And when Hamas won that election, Israel and the United States immediately organized a military coup against them, which Hamas defeated, for which the punishment was this blockade that deprives Hamas of, not Hamas, but Gaza, of food, of medical supplies, of sufficient water. I could go on and on and on and on. And then you have this conflict. And then every time there's a conflict, Israel mows the lawn. That's the expression they use. You know what they call it? They call it mowing the lawn. by which they mean the mass murder of Palestinian civilians. Now, is it true that the Gazans shoot rockets into Israel, killing innocent civilians? Yes, it is. Do I support that? No, I don't. But when it comes to the death of innocent civilians, Israel killed 20,000 Lebanese civilians in 1982 using illegal weapons like cluster bombs in a war that had no justification whatsoever. I could go on and on and on and on, except I'll say that the disproportion of power and responsibility and oppression is so markedly on one side that if you take the worst thing you can say about Hamas, multiplied by 1,000 times, and it still will not meet the Israeli repression and killing and dispossession of Palestinians. Now, that's my view of it. Now, as to this argument that we're not a practicing Jew, your friend can come and visit my family where we have Passover every year with our families. And we talk about how the liberation of the Jews from Egypt cannot just be a Jewish symbol. It has to be an international symbol. If after 2,000 years we can look for liberation and freedom, why can't the Palestinians? So, for him to confuse Zionism with Judaism is a big disservice. Is a big disservice. And to argue, because it's not true, and because there were Jews all along, right from the beginning. You know, there was a Hebrew, a Jewish philosopher and writer called Ahad'am, who in 1895 said that if we continue to treat the Arabs like this, he says, we're going to have disaster. He said it's in 1895. So there was Jews all along. So for him to conflate Judaism and Jewishness with Zionism is absolutely false. And for him to say that Jews who oppose Israel are not Jews is a slander. And for him to say that anybody who criticizes Israel is an anti-Semite is simply an egregious attempt to intimidate good non-Jews who are willing to stand up for what is true. And as for the final argument, that Israel is subjected to standards that other people are not, it's the other way around. It's the other way around. If you look at the Western press, when Hong Kong demonstrators throw stones at the police in Hong Kong, that's considered to be heroism in the American press. When in Myanmar, the demonstrators throw slingshots at the army, at the oppressive army, they're considered to be heroes in the Western press. When Palestinian kids throw stones at the Israeli soldiers, they're called terrorists. And Israel gets away with a lot more without much less criticism in the Western press than any other country. I'll say one more thing. I was recently contacted by a Palestinian woman from Jericho. She runs a program for Palestinian children who spend time in Israeli jails. 14, 15, 16-year-olds are jailed for months or years. Sometimes they can't see their families for months. And she runs a program for them. You know what she does? She meditates with them. She does Sufi dervish dancing with them, swirling dancing to bring them out of their stress state. She says, we don't have post-traumatic stress disorder here because the trauma is never post. The trauma is daily, she said. I just wish your Zionist friend would visit the occupied territories in Gaza like I have and let him speak the way he speaks now. If he's got any ounce of humanity left, he would cry like I did for 2 weeks when I was there. Do you remember who Albert Speer was?
Yeah, the architect for the Nazis.
Exactly. So Speer was a Nazi armaments minister and economics minister and Hitler's personal architect, you know. And he was a war criminal. And condemned as such. And he wasn't executed, he spent 40 years in Spandau prison after the war. And he had kind of a transformation. And I read his autobiography. And he said, he was often asked, what did you know? And he said, What I knew wasn't the right question. He was talking about the Nazi crimes, the genocide, the brutality, the war atrocities that the Nazis committed, and specifically the, you know, the attempted, or the genocide, the murder of the Jewish people. And he said, the question wasn't what I knew, the question is what I could have known if I'd wanted to. He said, because I had plenty of hints that, and he describes, for example, how in one of the armaments factories, he runs across some concentration camp prisoners who were seconded to the factory, and he asked them, would you rather be here or in the camp? And he said, the shock on their faces. And I never asked why you look so shocked with that question. Or at one time, Nazi generals, a German general, he says to a German general, I should visit the East sometimes. And his general says, you don't want to see what's going on there. And Speer says, I never asked why. Now, so the question is not what he knew, is what he could have known had he wanted to. Now, we're not living in Nazi Germany. Anybody can go on YouTube and listen to Ilan Pape, an Israeli historian, totally eloquent on Israeli history, who's living in England now because life became in Israel too difficult for him. Anybody can listen to Norman Finkelstein, a Jewish professor, world expert on Gaza, who was denied tenure at his university because of his public speaking against Israeli policy. You can listen to any number of Israeli Defense Forces soldiers who talk about the brutality that they now regret having committed. You can listen to Israeli pilots who talk about why they refuse to fly over Gaza because of the atrocities they're made to commit. You can get all the information you want. So if anybody these days doesn't know, it's not because the information is not available. It's not what you know, it's what you could know if you wanted to find out. Now, I can understand the warmth that Jews have for Israel. I used to be in that same camp. I can understand, after the horrors of the Nazi genocide, how we desperately want some protection. I can understand all that. But none of that excuses what we're doing. And none of that excuses not knowing truth. And this deliberate attempt to silence anybody who speaks, Jewish or non-Jewish. And that's, Russell, you know what? There are no two sides. I mean, it's always a complex question, but in terms of power and control, and it's pretty straightforward. There was a land with the people living there, and other people wanted it. They took it over, and they continue to take it over, and they continue to discriminate against, oppress, and dispossess that other people. That's what happened, and that's what's happening.
Ah, oh, Gabor, you magnificent man.
And I really wish that non-Jews of goodwill would stand up against the calumny and not be intimidated by this charge of anti-Semitism. I really wish that. And you know what? It's not a question of being pro-Palestinian. I'm not pro-Palestinian. I'm pro-truth. And ultimately, I think what's going on right now is going to be a disaster for Israelis in the long term, because this cannot be sustained. It cannot be sustained. And so I think, and there's a lot of good people in Israel who feel exactly the same way that I do. So it's not a question of being pro-Palestinian. It's a question of, are you in favor of justice and liberty and freedom and truth, or are you not?
That's an extract of my conversation with Dr. Gabor Mate from my podcast Under the Skin on Luminary. That'll be out on Saturday if you want to listen to it in its entirety. And coming up soon, I have an episode with someone who has a vastly differing opinion on the same matter. Thanks very much.